Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brian, on-site engineering, Austin Rodriguez, back at Gal. It is a beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Well, it's beautiful if you're at Highway Cantina. Always beautiful at Highway Cantina. Always sunny at Highway Cantina. It's where the boys will be today. Describe the scene for us, Blankers. Unfortunately, I'm not there to partake in the outstanding margaritas, the outstanding food, cheap and strong drinks. To set the scene for us, though.
It's absolutely fantastic. It is a great Tex-Mex environment, but it's set in such a way so that you're close to all three of the four stadiums within walking distance. They got a patio outside if you want to sit outside. Inside, the food is phenomenal. The drinks are, as they would put it, and quite honestly told me, cheap and strong, the best way that most people like them. And it's the perfect environment. Like, you're close to the work crowds coming off of downtown, but more so than that, with all three stadiums, before and after, partake in the festivities and then enjoy the great food.
Yeah, I love Tex-Mex. As you know, you don't get a body this without partaking fajitas, tacos, enchiladas, quesadillas. Great spot for happy hour. They're open 7 days a week, 11 to 9, Sunday through Thursday, 11 a to 10 p, Friday through Saturday. So get out. Come out today. Hang out with Blankers until later this evening. The boys will be there. Go out anytime, though. Highway Cantina.
Yep.
And like you said, it parked there, walk to the stadiums. It's close by, great spot to hang out, and it's where we're doing the show today. All right, Blankers, Astros and Braves series finale, getaway day at 6:05. No, we can't tease you. It's bottom of the sixth inning. Mauricio Dubon just hit a home run, so that's cool.
4-2.
Let's talk about yesterday's game first, though. Astros fall 6-2. They fall apart again for the second game in a row in the ninth inning. They allow four runs. Although Forrest Whitley's debut, I thought, went swimmingly. He didn't allow a run in his first ever major league outing. So Forrest Whitley, golf clap, tip of the cap, did not allow a run in his first major league outing, as my tongue firmly planted in my cheek.
And there's a positive. Look, you know what? From a perspective, and Astros fans don't want to hear this, but I've been preaching this throughout the majority of this early portion of the schedule. You really, except for a couple exceptions, have not had your doors blown off. And against the good teams, you are competing really, you're right there in the games. Last night was another perfect example. You're in that game. I mean, you're fighting tooth and nail. We were worried about Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown seemed to really settle in. He was keeping you in the game. His pitch count was down. My biggest qualm that I had in the game was the fact that I understand that 80 pitches are close to it when he came out for the seventh. I got a short leash. I know that, you could have a lot of things where you can say, well, he's got plenty of pitches left in the tank. You're in a one-run game. To me, was it one or two at that point? I think it was a one-run game.
Yeah, he gave up another run in that inning.
Yeah, the minute he puts a base runner on, I got someone warming up in the bullpen, and he's out. Because, one, you're trying to work with his psyche, too, because of what happened the last time, which was an embarrassment. And, two, because of the fact that this is a winnable game, and you and I talked about this, that when you're in a winnable game, understandably, fans want to say, well, you don't use this pitcher and high-leverage guy here and there. That's a situation where, if it's me, the minute he puts the first guy on second base, I'm done. I'm like, tip of the cap, great job, kept us in it. You did your job, now let me go get someone else to finish the deal. I thought that Dubin pitched better than his line score is going to
tell you,
but I wish he would have yanked him after he put the first runner on.
Yeah, I don't really have much issue with your Chad qualm there, but I would have probably left him in just because of the circumstance of your bullpen. Like, it's upside down. Like, all your guys are unavailable, so you're trying desperately to get another inning. I'm with you if this was, like, a must-win game. Your bullpen's totally available. The Hunter Brown psyche, I love all of your points. The one pushback I would have is that your bullpen is really depleted,
sure,
and you're looking for whatever way possible to get an extra three outs. But I really don't have a whole lot of objection to what you said. I thought Brown was a lot better obviously. I mean, he was obviously a lot better. He lasted through six innings this time instead of, you know, getting two outs. Only gave up two runs, five hits. I thought that he, like, pitched a little bit to contact, which I think is good because I think at times he falls in love with the strikeout. I think he falls in love with the spin. He has a very good fastball, and we've been begging for him to live off that fastball, get ahead with the fastball, challenge with the fastball. Of course, you want to hit your spots with the fastball. You don't want things right down the middle where the dudes are hitting the ball out of the ballpark. But get ahead with the fastball, then throw your breaking stuff out of the zone instead of needing those pitches for strikes.
Exactly.
I thought his sequencing was really good yesterday. That was the Hunter Brown that we're going to need to see if he's going to be a pivotal piece of this rotation.
Yeah, Brian's going to remember the song now because it's going to work and we can keep it because of the outing that he put forth. But at the same time, all kidding aside, you're right. That's exactly what I was thinking too. The stuff that worked ever since you got the comparisons to Verlander and your first year, you had so much success, and we saw so much that said, hey, this guy at some point in his career might even be in the competition for a Cy Young Award because his fastball-slider combo is so good. But it works so much better. I know the last outing when you were working on the slow curve. Slow curves, you know, it's an off-balance pitch in a lot of ways. One, you can't leave them hanging belt high, and more importantly than that, they work a whole lot better when you're pinpointing your fastball, you're up in counts, and now you can use them more as a waste pitch from the black of the plate on out as opposed to something you have to throw for a strike, which is where you're in the danger zone. And I thought he did a much better job of relying on pitching as opposed to throwing and throwing his best stuff, which is his first two pitches.
Yeah, that curve I don't really think is a pitch that's going to get hitters out. I think it's more of a pitch where you're throwing it to keep hitters off balance and maybe still a strike early in the count.
Right.
And then that hard, I mean, he doesn't really go with that cutter, slider anymore as much. He's kind of morphed it into that slow curve and then a slower slider, which is still pretty hard. I think that's his strikeout pitch. But get some outs with the fastball early in the count, and I thought he did that yesterday. I was pleased to see that. Promising signs from Hunter Brown, no doubt. The main storyline for me in that game, I have no idea how the Arcia home run was a home run. I was watching I watched the game, you know, late last night into this morning. Actually, it was all late last night. Whenever I got home, the ball went off of the yellow line, and as we know, it's got to clear the yellow line for it to be a home run. TK and Blummer were kind of confused throughout the broadcast too, like they were getting conflicting reports. Like, did it hit the yellow line, bounce up into the air, and then hit something that was out of play before coming back in? From the moment that play happened, I was losing my mind on why that was called a home run. And watching a little bit of today's broadcast on The Shin with our good friend Todd Callis and Jeff Blum, they said that everything they're hearing today was that the umpires got that call wrong.
There's no doubt. I think the only thing was there was so much confusion because people kept sending The Shin different interpretations of the ground rules. But even when they tried to put the graphic up, they omitted the one part that says when the ball hits the yellow bar and lands back in play, that the ball is then in play, not a home run. And the thing that's more perplexing than anything is when we talk about this across sports, especially in the NBA, And in baseball, when you're going to New York and you have access, assumably, to every angle, how do you not see that ball land right on the flat spot of that railing and then continue on and land in the on the playing field? Aside from Jake Meyers, probably could have been blamed for not making a bigger stink of it and pointing it out a little bit more and trying to say, hey, no, that ball, you know, was in play. The fact of the matter is you have the video you need in New York and your objective is to get the call right. And it was pretty darn obvious that if you had that camera angle, how could you say there wasn't enough evidence to overturn?
I think the only thing you could say, and look, I'm on your side on this, from the moment that it happened, like, how can you possibly rule that a home run? And I understand that the umpire, this is a very difficult play. Like, it's slicing into the Crawford boxes, it hits right around that yellow line, there's seats and there's fans in that area. So that's a really tough call to make live. But from the moment it happened, I'm like, that's not a home run. It never left the yard. If you're, like, making a case for the replay, like, team, wherever they're at, in the little nerd cave that they have around Major League Baseball, I think it's in New York. They didn't have view of where the ball went after it ricocheted off the railing. So you don't know what happened to the baseball whenever it got off camera, right? Like, you see it ricochet off the top of the railing in play, but then whenever it bounces up into the air, you have no idea what happens to the baseball. So in terms of being clear and conclusive, well, you don't even know where the baseball was after the ricochet. How can you say that it didn't hit anything else on the way to coming back down onto the field?
But didn't when I if correct me if I'm wrong, but the one replay that the shin had, and maybe it was the one they got later in the telecast, but it actually shows the ball ricochet off the railing and head towards the right field warning track. And I thought that they at least could show that it went down below the top of the green wall, coming back down. And then I thought they had a wide angle where they actually showed Jake picking the ball up to where.
But did you see it whenever it ricocheted up, though? Like, it came back into the field of play, but it went up. It went straight up. So it was like slicing on top of the yellow line railing, and then it bounced straight up in the air. So like,
but did it leave the frame?
I thought it did, yeah.
See, I thought that they had the one angle from behind home plate where they could follow it and track it enough to where it never left the frame, showing that it bounced and then directly went to the right field side of the corner. And that's why I kept rewinding it going.
I might have missed that one, Blinkers. I could have missed it.
Yeah. And you know the other thing, too, Jeremy, is they possibly could have gotten a different angle later in the game, one of the handhelds or someone that maybe in stadium. But later on in the telecast, they showed another replay. I go, I don't know if you can find any more conclusive than that because it hits the rail and it goes right to Jake.
That drove me crazy. It's fortunate that it didn't cost them the game. Like, hindsight 2020, like, they're not going to win that game yesterday. So that's it was a bad call. It didn't influence the games in terms of winning and losing. Maybe it changes the circumstances and, you know, how the game plays from a situational perspective. But I really don't see how. Like, even if it's nothing, Hunter Brown's coming out for the seventh inning. He gave up a run. Then you had a four-run ninth. Everybody's, like, not available in your bullpen. Like, I don't think that it influenced the game. It looked like it was going to for a while. I don't think once the game was complete we could say that it influenced it. But a blown call. Astros didn't get the break there. Maybe it didn't cost them the game. I don't think that it did. And then the last one I have was, you know, we were getting a lot of grief from, you know, a lot of angst from Yiner Diaz not throwing anybody out the other day.
Yeah.
Go, oh, you know, he's not throwing anybody out. He's 0 for 12. You know, don't take into account at all that the pitchers are slow to the plate. He threw out two guys yesterday on the bases, and his arm is a cannon.
Yeah, Michael Harris, and really, to the naked eye, that was a really, really close play. But then on the replays, when we talked about pop times, I think it was yesterday. But when you look at just how quick he gets out of the crouch and how fast that ball is on its way, on like a seed, you're like, oh my goodness! If anybody questions this guy's arm and ability to throw behind the plate, yeah, you can question framing pitches, you can question blocking pitches to a degree, but you're never going to question this kid's cannon and the way that he can his pop times. Those throws were impressive.
Yeah, he's I was, again, watching the broadcast today. They were talking about his he's never allowed a pass ball in his career, and he has, like, the most pitches in the dirt blocked. So, like, that's good. I think there's times when he can prevent some wild pitches where he doesn't, but he's getting better. I have noticed improvement in that regard. The framing is maybe a little ways to go, but still a very young catcher. Fan of Yiner Diaz, no doubt about that.
You'll enjoy this. The funny thing, I'm in the gym this morning with one of my buddies who's a diehard Astros fan, and he's just shaking his head, and I'm like, the call, right? The call on the home run? He's like, no. Did you see the pitches Altuve took last night? I'm going, okay, slow down. One, he got rung up on a pitch that wasn't a strike early on because they were really giving the pitchers the inside corner. But more so than that, you do realize he had three straight multi-hit games. You're going to get mad at him at a game like, he goes, well, maybe I'm spoiled. I go, yeah, you can't get mad at Altuve last night if he just put three straight games of multiple hit games.
Yeah, he has those games, though. Like, he'll go nuts. He'll lead the American League in everything, best Astro of all times, and then he'll have a game where he goes 0 for 4, three strikeouts, and he's taking strike threes right down the middle. It's weird, but, I mean, that's it's also baseball. I mean,
yeah, Yordan does it every now and then. You and I were talking about, I think it was last week, where there were two at-bats where he just watched three straight pitches right down Main Street.
Yeah. Todd, the show brings up a good point. You know, why wasn't Ryan Pressly available in yesterday's game? I think that is fair. Like, if you're going to bring Hader into the game down by a run the day before, why aren't you bringing Pressly into the game in the seventh or eighth inning whenever it's a one- or a two-run game? I think it is a fair point.
Yep, for sure. And I think his last appearance was a very low pitch count. I think it was single digits. So, yeah, everything lined up that I expected to see Pressly at some point. I was surprised he didn't pitch last night. But, you know, like you said, the bullpen's taxed. I know that they're trying to do some things to try and preserve a little bit the high leverage guys. But, you know, right now, especially playing a team like the Braves, it's all hands on deck, and I would like to have seen Pressly there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We'll collect your thoughts on the Astros today or yesterday. Busy show today, as you might expect on a Wednesday. We'll talk about today's Astros game throughout. I mean, it doesn't need to go final, but when it does go final, we'll talk about it in greater detail. Who's more important to the Rocket future? The Texans have a bunch of top 30 visits. Do we like the guys that the Texans have top 30 visits with? Because they usually draft from their top 30. We saw some play in basketball yesterday. Is the Warriors dynasty dead? And also, Brian makes faces on Wednesday. Why is Brian making faces today? 713-780-ESPN, the HRNP listener line. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On ESPN Houston on YouTube. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sack by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham on the Twitter. When we come back, who would you rather be your primary first baseman? Jose Abreu or John Singleton? 713-780-3776. One thing that I want in my life is a great outdoor grill. Are you ready to take your outdoor cooking game to the next level? Look no further than Texas Star Grill Shop. Sign up today, 975grills.com. Sign up for the club, and they'll send you all of these great discounts, great pricing that you can't find anywhere else. So 975grills.com to sign up for all of these excellent offers from Texas Star Grill Shop. But a wide selection of top-of-the-line grills, outdoor kitchen accessories. You'll be the king or queen of the backyard barbecue scene. From sleek and stylish gas grills to classic and rugged charcoal options, we've got something for every outdoor chef. Knowledgeable staff, their customer service is great. They'll take care of you from start to finish. You can really trust the folks there at Texas Star Grill Shop. But also, more than just grills, elevate your outdoor space with high-quality kitchen islands, outdoor refrigerators, stainless steel cabinetry. Create the outdoor kitchen of your dreams with Texas Star Grill Shop. Just head over to 975grills.com, shop their great selection, and also join the club. Members of this club will enjoy special in-store discounts that can't be found anywhere else in the latest, anywhere else in the market. And these latest and greatest products in the outdoor cooking world, you get free delivery, you get free assembly at your home. Go to 975grills.com, take advantage of these special deals, and let Texas Star Grill Shop get working to you on this outdoor kitchen of your dreams. 975grills.com, it's Texas Star Grill Shop.
We're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
Highway Cantina, the setting today, 1201 St. Emmanuel Street. If you park there, you can walk to all the nearby stadiums. It's open 7 days a week. That's fantastic. Tex-Mex food. Is there anything better than Tex-Mex food? I don't think so. Strong drinks, cheap drinks. That sounds like a double win. Frozen margaritas, all of the works, fajitas, tacos, enchiladas. Perfect for date night, perfect for groups, perfect for happy hour, outdoor patio, happy hours daily as well. I can't beat Highway Cantina in Edo. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Who would you rather be the Astros' primary first baseman? Would you rather it be, and we're only giving you two options. You can't say, well, Brandon Bell, which I would. You can't say Joey Loperfido, which, again, I would. You only have two options. You have two options. Jose Abreu or John Singleton? Who would you rather be the primary first baseman that's starting five games a week and you're throwing out there and he's getting four at-bats a game?
I hate to say this because I've not been a fan of his either, but I think that because age matters at this point in their career and bat speed matters, I'm going to say John Singleton. I've seen this play out. I've seen this movie before with Jose Abreu. And I just don't see the happy ending that we saw a year ago when he found it late in the season into the playoffs and looked like a respectable first baseman. You and I have talked about this over and over since the season started. He can't catch up with a changeup, let alone a fastball. I don't know what the hell's going on, but it doesn't look like it's a quick fix. I know Baggy spent an hour with him in the batting cages. I have zero confidence in Jose Abreu. And when you start talking about him being a defensive replacement after some of the defensive plays that he's not made this year, I'm going to live with John Singleton because I do believe that at least with his bat speed, when the barrel hits the ball, it will go far, that he can catch up with a fastball, and that he's not, even though he's not that big of an upgrade, I just feel like at his age, with his bat speed still, you get a better chance to get some sort of productivity out of a John Singleton right now than you do a Jose Abreu.
Yeah, I actually think it's a significant gap between the two currently. And I know that Abreu's baseball cards a lot better. Dana Brown was on the flagship again talking about the back of the baseball card, which disgusts me. In my mind, John Singleton's a better baseball player right now than Jose Abreu. Neither one of them is like an average offensive first baseman. But of the two, I think Singleton is a lot better. Singleton has a five-game hitting streak and has 8 hits on the year. Jose Abreu has 4 hits. Let me say that again. John Singleton has a 5-game hitting streak. Jose Abreu has 4 hits. That's alarming. Now, like batting average, all that stuff, is it early, small sample? Sure. But Abreu's under 100. John Singleton's 258, like on-base percentage. The name of the game's not to get out, right? Jose Abreu gets on base 15% of the time. John Singleton, 34% of the time. If you really want to take a deep dive and look at Baseball Savant and those sort of things, like what are they expecting these guys to do, Jose Abreu tracks to be one of the worst offensive players in all of baseball. Not first baseman, all offensive players. His Baseball Savant, where blue is not good, is icy blue. It's royal blue. It is disgusting. It is gross. At least John Singleton's got a little bit of red, a little bit of pink mixed around. But also, like, who gives you better at-bats? Jose Abreu walks up there, looks at 3 or 4 pitches, and then he's done. He's out. The pitcher gets him out. And he's throwing fastballs right down the middle of the plate a lot of times that are 92, 93, and Jose Abreu can't touch it because he's old and he's washed. John Singleton at least hits fastballs. John Singleton will hit a fastball all right. John Singleton makes the pitcher work. John Singleton at least forces the pitchers to get into a high count or throw a lot of pitches and work to get John Singleton out. If I had to pick between one of these two, and we're starting to see a spot to do it more and more, John Singleton would be my primary first baseman over Jose Abreu.
Could not agree more. And I think that we both, if given the option of C, which would be one of the two guys, or C and D, Loperfido or Belt, I think that we would both side with, you know, both of those options. We talked about it, I think, yesterday about, hey, take it with a, you know, like a progressive step. If you want to keep it internally, then give Loperfido a chance. If you have to just IL Abreu because you're hell-bent on not letting him go and DFAing him because of the money you're paying him, so be it. But you did it last year. Don't be afraid to do it again for the betterment of your baseball team. And bring the kid up and see another guy boom or bust, like Singleton's been labeled his whole career, but a guy that's been highly productive at AAA to say, hey, look, if I have a better option right now with the way this team's been scuffling overall and the fact that they need production wherever they can get it, give the kid a chance to at least get the games that you were given to Abreu. If he means playing Singleton more because he's been up already, fine. So, and let him get his feet wet, but let that be your option C, but get the first option that you go to before you do anything more drastic. And then start talking to Brandon Belt's agent and just saying, hey, look, we are interested. The price has to be right, you know, and because I got to believe by now if he was going to sign with someone, he'd already have signed. So at a certain point, they might start getting more desperate too, and then you can start meeting in the middle and finding out, hey, if you can get that number within a mil one way or the other, that's an expense worth making because of how important this season is for this team.
I'm disgusted how much you've hijacked this and changed the question. It was Abreu or Singleton.
No.
And you're talking about
the first time. I answered it right off the top and gave you my answer.
I know you did.
But I think that you and I both would love to have a multiple choice A, B, C, and D, because I'm more in favor of C than D than anything with A or B.
713-780-ESPN. Would you rather have Singleton? Would you rather have Abreu? 5895, he goes, that's a clown question, bro. But then he doesn't say anything else. So I don't know if it's a clown question suggesting that it should be Singleton or if it's a clown question suggesting that it should be Abreu. So I don't really know where his mind is at. Omega Man and Humble, no-brainer. I'll take the guy with an MVP that could potentially flip the switch any day over the guy that has never shown he can hit consistently. So Omega Man is Jeff Bagwell, where he's basing it off of the back of a baseball card. He's not basing it on what a guy currently is and what a guy is going forward. So let's forget, let's totally ignore that Jose Abreu can't touch a fastball. Let's ignore that these, you know, guys with low velocity are gassing fastballs by him, whereas John Singleton's making pitchers work. And let's look at the back of the baseball card and see that Jose Abreu has a bunch of hits. He's got a COVID MVP. John Singleton's a 4A player. Like, if that's the thought process, like, what is Billy Spiers up to? I think Billy Spiers could play first base. What is Sean Berry up to these days? Those guys have a better back of the baseball card. Back of the baseball card should be thrown in the trash. Like, this guy's a former MVP. Cool. That's outstanding that he was a former MVP. So was Barry Bonds. Jeff Bagwell was a former MVP. He might give you better at-bats than Jose Abreu.
I know Billy Spires was a better punter than anybody else that you mentioned.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I think he's a special teams coach now. I think at Clemson, actually.
Because that's where he went to. He went to Clemson and was a. I want to. I don't know if he was an All-American or not. He was a hell of a punter.
I love Billy Spires.
Yeah, look, I am nauseated by how much, and we joked about it at the time when Bagwell made the comment and people started to at least pay attention to it. The whole back of the baseball card conversation to me is so annoying because you're, I mean, you look at all the different ways you can look at this, and like you pointed out, but you tell me that you're going to sign a guy because his resume looks so good that people, no matter how well he plays going forward, are just going to put him on a pedestal and say, He was a great player. He's a great player because of what he did. It's all about return on investment. It's all about what you're getting when you sign them. And you're not getting a whole hell of a lot, and you haven't gotten a whole hell of a lot out of Jose Abreu since you put him in Astro Blue and Orange. And the fact of the matter is, at some point, you're going to have to be willing to cut bait or at least demote him gradually. Demote him to the IL or demote him to the bench. And at a certain point, I think sooner rather than later, the hard discussion is going to have to take place amongst the committee that you might have to just set him free and realize as a baseball team trying to win and get very far in the playoffs and win a title, your better options are to have two different guys you can go to at first base than a guy that is a strikeout waiting to happen. And the other thing, Jeremy, I was going to point out is
the pitchers aren't even working to strike him out.
Like, well, that's where I was going next.
It's like a pitcher spot.
If you look at what they're doing with Singleton, they respect him enough that they are still working corners, throwing other pitches, and moving the ball around the plate. When you're looking at what Abreu's seeing, it's basically two gas fastballs straight down the middle or a changeup that starts belt high and drops, and then just nothing but off-speed on the outside corner, which he flails at, or another fastball up above the strike zone, and he's gone. 3-4 pitches, that's it.
Singleton's numbers aren't good, but they're better than Jose Abreu's. And Singleton, like you said, at least gives you an at-bat. Like, he at least makes the pitcher work, where Jose Abreu's not making you work. It's almost like a pitcher spot. It's like a Martin Maldonado spot. Tony 22, don't you miss the late 90s, early 2000s baseball where the first baseman was the number 3 or 4 hitter for pretty much every team? It's still that way, just not for the Houston Astros. Right. Look who you're currently playing. Matt Olson is in that spot. Let's see who you play. You played the
Rizzo's
Rangers.
In the
they
top
have an
five.
Injury. Rizzo's in the top five. Freddie Freeman bats, what, top three?
Three.
I don't know how they're using him this year with Shohei.
Polar
Pete
Bear.
Alonso's in the middle of the order. Like, it's still that way. It's just not that way for the Houston Astros. Some people were saying sign Lou Gehrig. His back of the baseball card is good. Scott Hattieburg. He was the Moneyball guy, right? Where Art Howard.
Scott Hattieburg was an A. Yeah.
I think he was the. I'm pretty sure famous.
He was the guy where Billy Bean said, like, if I could have 9 Scott Hattiebergs in my lineup, that would be the perfect lineup.
Is that the one
lineup.
Where Art Howe, the whole argument, because he wanted to keep Carlos Pena?
I don't remember the specific argument, but Scott Hattieburg was like the Moneyball darling for Billy Bean.
He was the one, Carlos, like, this Pena. Is Scott Hattieburg, his only deficiency is he doesn't play defense or whatever. Like, I think that's the meme or whatever. 60-30, if that's my choices, I'm going Singleton all day. I don't know how you couldn't, unless you just caught up on the back of the baseball card. 7-3-2-2, any chance you send Abreu to AAA, not giving up on him, just trying to get him right. He doesn't have options. He would have to, one, you would have to DFA him, and he would have to clear waivers, which he would, and then he would have to accept the assignment, which I don't think he would. The more plausible way to get him AAA at-bats is actually to place him on the injured list with a phantom injury and then rehab assignment him. That's the only way, and he would, I mean, again, he's going to have to be on he's going to have to be on the same page with you when it comes to an injury. This guy says, for Jose Abreu, thanks, Jeff Bagwell. Yeah. This guy goes with option Y, Yiner Diaz at first base. I don't hate that idea either.
It's another
Yiner
internal
at first,
option for sure.
Catches. That's a better option, too. Like, there's 5 other options that are better than Jose Abreu at first base. The another one, Ocho going with the Dubon option. Plan D, I'd rather have Dubon at first, and I'd rather have Dubon at third and center field, too. Okay, come on. Bregman's having a big day. Can we just clone Mauricio Dubon to start all 3 of these positions? I think we overrate Mauricio Dubon a little bit. I love Mauricio Dubon. To say that Mauricio Dubon's better than Alex Bregman is a hot take.
It's a stretch.
It's a very hot take.
That's a reach, not even a stretch.
Spires is my favorite all-time Astro. He could do everything and do it really good. He played everywhere. I mean, he could play every infield position.
Played outfield, too.
You played a little corner outfield, right?
Yep.
Anyone that says Abreu over Singleton don't know ball. You can clearly see the advantage of having Singleton to play. With that being said, it doesn't mean Singleton is good. I couldn't say it better myself. Singleton hit 2 home runs in 1 game last year, and we still have that bum. Our management's not getting rid of Abreu. While that is true, Singleton's still better than Abreu. Just
no doubt.
Both things can be true there.
Just watch the tape, watch the games, and tell me that if you just side-by-sided the at-bats, that you can't see the bat speed and the ability of one versus the other right now.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Abreu or Singleton, who would you rather? All right, do you want a front office that looks at the back of the baseball card or projects what a player is going to do going forward? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
Our great Tex-Mex strong, cheap drinks. What is there not to love? I get to Highway Cantina. See us. We'll be here until 6, or just stop by anytime. 1201 St. Emmanuel Street in Edo. Great spot, too, before the games. You can park there, have a margarita, have some fajitas, walk to the stadiums, and have a good old time. Why? Well, there's nothing better than that. So I asked this question on my Twitter, at Jeremy Branham, thumbs up. Who would you rather be the Astros' primary first baseman, Jose Abreu or John Singleton? And a lot of interesting responses. Come on, Abreu, one has a good track record. Okay.
What are we looking at?
Are we looking to get a player through 2022? Because okay, let's pull up Jose Abreu's career numbers with the Astros, which was all of last year and the early goings this year. Let's pull up John Singleton's numbers in the latest stint with the Astros. So last year and this year, neither one's very good. But you're looking at John Singleton as an OPS of around 635. He's got an on base percentage around 325. Like, so he gets on base 33% of the time. He's got an on base. He's got an OPS of like 640, whatever it was. Jose Abreu's on-base percentage is 284, his OPS 644 last 2 years. Like, Singleton's outperformed him the last two seasons. So, like, the track record of 2014 through 2022 is how we're making baseball decisions on April 17, 2024? Like, that makes absolutely no sense.
And the only way you can start to fathom that is if you're, like, a team that's just wallowing in mediocrity, if you're Miami, if you're Kansas City in the past, or teams like that, and you're just like, no, we need that veteran presence, and we want this, and we want that. No, the bottom line is, what matters is, this is a team that's competing for a World Series. They're not just trying to stay above 500 or be respectable. And the fact is, even then, real general managers make real tough decisions on the fact that a guy that might have been there and done that isn't doing it anymore, and he's got to go because someone that gives me a better chance to win night in, night out is sitting there right now. He might not give you that much better of a chance, but he's younger and his bat's quicker, and that's a start. And then you start doing all the things that we've mentioned, from internally looking at whether it's Loperfido or it's Dubon or it's Yiner, whatever, because Caratini has been hitting. Things have to be done, and there's action that has to take place, because this team is too good to just sit there and let it just rest the way it currently is.
Yeah. Someone asks, is this a joke or a real question? Which I responded, I mean, it's a question for Joe Espada every single day. Joe Espada has to make that decision every single day. So yeah, it could be both. It could be a joke and a real question, but at the very minimum, it is a real question. Yes.
If you don't think it's a pertinent question, if you don't think that it's something that Joe Espada and the entire Astros front office is dealing with, then tell me why Abreu isn't playing every day. Tell me why Abreu's been moved all the way down to the eighth spot. Because you know why? Because their gears are turning, and they know how bad he's been, and they know this can't continue. And while they're trying to jumpstart him and figure out if he's got anything left in the tank, they're trying to win baseball games, and unlike Dusty Baker, they're not going to leave him in the top six. They're not going to force feed him in the lineup every day, and they're not going to say he's got to play because he's getting paid. And that means that you are looking at the beginning of what could be the end of Jose Abreu as an Astro, because of the fact that they're already doing things to show you they're cognizant and worried about what's been going on.
Well, also, it is a question every single day. Like, when Joe Espada is filling out the lineup every single day, okay, who's playing first base today? He asks himself this question daily. Every time the Astros have a game and he's filling out the lineup card, the Astros have to ask themselves this question. Which, back of baseball card is the theme for the Stros. Like, okay, Jose Abreu, back of baseball card, he should be the everyday first baseman. Do you want a front office that looks at the back of the baseball card, or do you want a front office that projects what a player is going to do going forward?
I want a front office that wants to win baseball games going forward, not worried about what trophies they have on their shelf. So therefore, I need a front office that's concerned about winning every game going forward, return on the investment of guys that you've invested in, but also the realization that at some point not all of them are going to turn out, and I'm going to do the best thing for my team to win every baseball game I can, and therefore I don't give a rat's ass about the back of a baseball card. What I'm concerned about is winning baseball games on a consistent basis to be the team that I expect them to be.
Yeah, I think that a general manager's job is to try to project what a player is going to be going forward. And saying this, like, back of the baseball card does come into the projections. Like, it is a variable. What a guy has done the previous 3 years, like, let's just use that as an example, that does matter on what you think he's going to do for the next 3 years. But there's other things that come into play as well. Like, do we see decline in those previous 3 years? What is the player's age? Because we've seen in sports history that almost every single player, not all, Barry Bonds was at the top of his game whenever he left, but almost every single player has declined. Like, that's evolution. That's just natural that a player is going to decline. So all of these things are factors. Back of baseball card, yes, that matters. Age, yes, that matters. What kind of slippage has the player seen in those previous 3 to 5 years? All of those things matter. All of those things come into play. I want a general manager that is projecting what a player is going to do going forward. What happens if you sign a player to a 3-year deal, which is what they signed Jose Abreu for? And look, we like the free agent acquisition of Jose Abreu. Mm-hmm. Now, we're also realistic on where it's at right now. We were wrong there. We didn't love the third year. But whenever you're a GM and you're signing a guy for 3 years, what's more important? The 3 years from that point going forward or the previous 3 years? So looking ahead and trying to project as best as you can, and it isn't an exact science, no doubt about it, that matters way more than the previous 3 years of a back of a baseball card.
No question. I mean, you're not getting you don't have a better chance to get a base hit with runners in scoring position, you're Jose Abreu, because you've won an MVP trophy. It's about the fact that right now you can't catch up to a wiffle ball when it's thrown at you underhand the way you're swinging the bat. The changeups are fooling you as much as fastballs are, and at least Singleton, with the boom or bust and how infrequently he hits home runs, as you mentioned, at least he's hitting the ball enough to give you a chance when he has a competitive at-bat at the plate. And this team, with the way it's gotten off to a slow start, needs it more than ever. But even if they didn't, it would be something that they were dealing with every day and should be concerned about.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Back a baseball card or projecting what's going forward, 713-780-3776. Also, when we come back, the Texans under Nick Caserio have been known to draft players that they bring in for their top 30 visits. Who have the Texans brought in? Because it increases the odds of who they're selecting. And do we like these guys? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a minute to talk about Allstate Windows and Siding. I'm telling you right now, I speak from experience. I got Allstate Windows at my house. The difference that it's made in so many ways has been so unbelievable. That's why I'm telling you about them right now. Allstate Windows and Siding, well, first of all, the company's been in business for almost 50 years. The family still owns and operates the business, starting with Mary in the office and her brother who goes out and makes a lot of the calls himself. And they can tell you just exactly all the ways that Allstate Windows and Siding help protect, in most of our cases, the biggest investment you have, your house. That means it's a hard outer shell finish. The siding, easy to maintain, great color, great durability, protection against all the elements. The windows, the same thing. They're going to withstand even the hurricane force winds and everything you deal with down in Houston, as well as keeping the heat in the winter and the heat out in the summer. That they're fantastic. You can save up to 40% on your energy bills because of the fact that you get the windows and or the siding. You do both, chances are even greater that you get more. They're fantastic. So are the people at Allstate. They're the best in the business. Now, right now, 24 months interest free. They are going to take care of you. They have all kinds of deals. 30% off on all windows. Discounts for senior citizens, first responders, and military as well. Start the process today. It costs absolutely nothing for them to come to your house and see what they can do. 832-204-1936. 832-204-1936 or AllstateWindowsAndSiding.com.
The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Killer Bees, Highway Cantina. Ryan Stressley doing Ryan Stressley things. Blowing a 4-2 lead, 4-4. Astros are pinch hitting Jose Abreu for John, or using John Singleton for Jose Abreu. So kind of to piggyback off of our entire conversation, who do you rather be the primary first baseman, Abreu or Singleton? I think Joe Espada has been a little telling. You talked about how recently that they've been using Singleton more. Singleton's numbers are better. I need to go back and look like at the last five games to see who started five, six, seven games, whatever the stretch is here. But if you're going to use Singleton to pinch it for Abreu in the bottom of the eighth inning, you might as well just start John Singleton. The whole lefty-righty thing. John Singleton's way better against lefties in his career than righties. His reverse splits are insane. Lifetime in the bigs, he's .839 against lefties, .839 OPS against lefties, .535 against righties. So I don't want to hear the lefty-righty thing, you're platooning the two. If these two guys are your first base options and John Singleton's coming off the bench in late in a game, in a tie game in the eighth inning as a pinch hitter for Jose Abreu, Joe Espada is telling you who he has more faith in, and it's John Singleton.
That's just another one added to the list of everything that I mentioned about the fact that if you are in the belief and in the minority in the belief that Abreu should just be out there every day and he's going to be fine and leave him alone, and that, you know, this is a clown question, then just watch all the actions of this baseball team and this manager and tell me that they aren't thinking about it. The fact is, in the last half inning, Mr. Defensive Guy, too, Abreu, you know, threw up all over himself on a ground ball, too. So,
kind of a tough hop, but I'm with you. Like, being an athlete,
you still got to put
play.
Your body in front of that baseball and keep it from getting away from you and smother it at the very least. But you need to, if you see the games on a consistent basis, you see all you need to see to realize it's a real question. And they're coming to a harsh reality sooner rather than later because of the lack of productivity, starting first and foremost with a guy you're paying $19 million a year to. But right after that, Singleton's going to have to keep picking it up and do a little bit more, or he's going to be, you know, not even demoted because he's out of options. But you're going to do something with him eventually, too, if he doesn't pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, Singleton struck out. Like, this just goes to show you that overall it's a bad situation. Like, first baseman, we talk about this all the time. First base is a spot where you're expecting to get good offense. And the Astros are getting not only bad first base offense, they're getting bad offense, period. So this is pick your poison, which is the least of two evils. Singleton slightly, but Singleton ain't great either. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. The Texans under Nick Caserio have proven to be a team that will bring guys in on top 30 visits and then draft those guys. Like, Anderson was a top 30 visit, Stroud was a top 30 visit. I don't think Tank Dell was a top 30 visit because he counts as a local prospect, which you can bring in local prospects that are outside of the top 30, which, you know, grows your pool. But they people that they bring in are people that they're interested in. Some teams use this differently. Some teams, it's not like a tell at all. But the Texans under Caserio have been proven that they like to pick players from their top 30 visits, guys that they bring in. So here are a few guys, that the Texans have brought in, and how much does it move the needle? How much does it move Blanker's needles onto some of these guys? And some of these guys, like, we don't know anything about. We might have seen the name, but we don't know a ton about them. Edgerrin Cooper, linebacker, Texas A&M.
Heard a lot of good things. Heard Lance speak very highly of him. I think you've spoken highly of him. I think it's a guy that you probably have seen a lot more than a lot of scouting staffs. But I think that what that translates to me is D'Amico can figure out real quick if this guy is a guy that he could use and implement in his system. And if he's a guy that they're interested in, that they want to talk to, then you got to believe that he's a good fit for their system. And we know that as much as Al-Shaair was brought in, that, you know, they've got some linebackers. We know 2020. Look, he's an intelligent, heady football player, but he's also limited in a lot of ways. If they want to improve the linebacker position at a certain point and bring in a guy like that, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm a fan of this. I like Edgerrin Cooper quite a bit. Bringing in Al-Shaair, though, and then pairing him with Christian Harris, I don't know how much of a need there is for linebacker.
Right.
Now, I've also been the guy that's been banging the drum. I'm not drafting based on need. I'm drafting the best player available. So I'd be totally fine, because I think if you're only going to have one chance to draft Cooper, and I think that's at 42. I don't think he lasts there to 59. So that's your one shot. So if he's at the top of your board, like, I'm not mad at that. Another guy, and credit to this Redditor that put together this list. I really appreciate that. Enos Rakestraw, Missouri, the corner we've talked about. His name has come up a few times whenever we talk about whenever we do the Caserio mock draft stuff. Enos Rakestraw being brought in from a top 30 visit.
I like it a lot because I think that, you know, the conversation you and I have had, the discussion back and forth, is you've been more BPA and I've been more, but I still want to fill the needs I think that are still there where there are some holes to be filled or at least attention to be paid to position groups. I like this because I've been all over draft corner at 42. I think that this is a guy that a lot of people were hot on early. I think some people have cooled off a little bit now. But if they're bringing him in and they like him and you get a guy of that caliber at 42, and maybe he slides, but I don't know if he'll slide to the second pick of the second round. But I think that I'm all over the fact that if they like Rakestraw and they bring him in, I think that's good.
Yeah, if he's the pick at 42, I'm fine. Like, I mean, there's a lot of names that if they're the pick at 42, I'm perfectly okay with. I'd be cool with Edger and Cooper at 42, even though I don't think it's a great position to need. I'd be really cool with Enos Rakestraw if he's the pick at 42, because that is a position to need. He could compete to be a starter, I think, whereas Cooper is probably fighting to be that third linebacker in a 4-3, maybe a situational guy. He's not starting, in my mind, over Christian Harris and Azeez Alshire. The next one's a left tackle, Jordan Morgan from Arizona. This is the first time I've heard of who Jordan Morgan is. The draft grade on him is an early second-round pick. The idea of Jordan Morgan with one of your second-round picks.
Yeah, I don't know enough about him, but if he's not versatile enough to play guard as well, then that's – and because if he's going to be, you know, taken in the second round, I've said, you know, pretty consistently that I want them to go with positions of need like corner and or safety and defensive tackle, maybe wide receiver. But I'm not looking for a strictly tackle guy in the second round if that's where he's projected to go, so I'm out on that.
Yeah, that's my answer, too. I've never heard of the guy, if I'm being completely transparent. I don't want to tackle with one of those second-round picks. If you draft a tackle, I'm okay drafting one in the later rounds, kind of a project guy. Maybe he can be your eventual swing tackle that he's playing in case there's an injury or something like that. I'm not opposed to that. But and you know, even being a best player available kind of guy, I would be disappointed if the Texans really used any of their first three picks, assuming they stay in the second round and the third round, on a left tackle. So if Morgan doesn't have positional flexibility or he's not like a guard at the next level, that's one that I'm out on. I agree with you there.
Well, and the other thing too, Jeremy, that we were talking about, and Brian wants to get in here for a second too, but the big thing to me is with the first two guys you mentioned, we're also guys that have been very firm on the fact that you still need to build the depth on your roster as well. So maybe they're not starters right away, but they end up being starters, mm-hmm. and in the meantime, they add depth to your roster.
Two deep guys, yeah.
Yeah, and talent, which they've lacked in the past.
I'm just curious as this conversation goes along, because obviously Jeremy's, you know, feels like the exception of quarterback, pretty much best player available.
Yeah, I'm Joel, a JBPA kind of guy.
More position of need. And I think I lean towards Joel's side just because saying, what did that shock you?
Shock.
Joel just jumped back like he touched a door handle and got a little electric shock there. No, but I think I lean a little bit more towards Joel's side just because there are so, not that this team has massive holes all across the roster, but there are more than enough positions of need to where I feel like drafting position of need, there's a large enough group of players at a large enough group of positions where you're not really forcing it. So I guess my question to you, Jeremy, is like, is there any position other than quarterback where you wouldn't be willing to go best player available, especially
in the top 42? Two rounds?
Yeah, in the top two rounds.
Probably tackle. Yeah, tackle would be second on that list.
So running back, you'd be willing to do BPI?
That's one that's a little tricky because, like, I don't necessarily believe in drafting a running back with a top two-round pick, but it is a pretty big need for the Texans. Like, it wouldn't unseat Joe Mixon as your starter, of course, but your second running back's going to be used a lot, and their two running backs that they have on their 53, not counting future reserve guys because our friend is one of the guys that's a future reserve guy, they have Mixon and Damian Pierce. So, like, they're absolutely going to draft a running back. And if they feel, let's say it's Jonathan Brooks, who's in most people's top-ranked running back, although he's not on their top 30 visit, and he would be a local visit too, and he didn't get visited either, so that's kind of
like
maybe they're not in.
That is a little surprising, yeah.
Yeah, I think it might be a tell that they're not in on Jonathan Brooks, but just for the sake of the conversation, okay, like they love him. They feel like the value there is really, really good. Let's say 59 as opposed to 42, because I don't like it at 42 at all. But I could live with them taking a running back in the second round. I would kind of grit my teeth, but I'm like, okay.
Really?
Like, I would. Because it's another weapon for C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
You're trying to make this offense really, really good. You're trying to give weapons for Bobby Slowick. Now, again, generally speaking, this goes against my philosophy. I'm not a huge fan of it. But in the current situation the Texans find themselves in, where you have Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce as your only two running backs on your roster, if they fell in love with a running back, I don't hate the idea of drafting one in the second round.
I think there's four positions where I wouldn't be willing to go BPA. And you obviously, you guys have talked about some of them. But quarterback, yep. as Joel said, offensive tackle. I don't yep. want an offensive tackle, especially at 42.
No, I said that too, Brian. Like, hey,
I'm not trying to. Okay. We're going to start an argument back and forth who said what. But quarterback, offensive tackle. And I would throw, especially at 42, running back. And then also, at least with the second-round pick, I would throw wide receiver there. I know Diggs is only a one-year deal, but I just – With their needs in the secondary and at left guard, there's just too many other needs for me to take such a luxury position with the second round pick right now.
Here's what I would add to that, guys. I would say, I think running back in the second round is too high, but I think that the other thing that goes to the points we were the discussion we had yesterday, I think it was the fact that there's still guys out on the street that are free agents that are above average NFL players. That can fill voids. It makes it easier for me to also consider BPA at certain positions because of the fact that you can still go out and get a quality player at a position of need. But at the same time, I think if I have a chance to get a guy that is rated very highly that could be a starter or fight for starter, and also like from the standpoint of receiver, the harsh reality of all of this that we don't want to face is we're assuming you probably lose Diggs at the end of the year. You keep Nico. But if you run into the possibility you lose both of them, then at least from a depth and systematic standpoint, it's nice to have drafted a guy that at least is working through your system to be a guy that can contribute next year if you do lose either one, both of those guys.
Like I agree with what Brian said. Like I do think it's super luxurious to draft one of those, like a running back or receiver. Maybe it's just me like wanting to have a really electric offense where I'd be willing to be okay with it. But let's not ignore like how many great second-round running backs there's been. Like if you end up drafting a guy that turns into Breece Hall, you're going to be disappointed with that. So, like, that's trust your evaluation. I don't necessarily believe in drafting a running back with the top two rounds, but if he's by far your best player available and it is a position of need because you don't have a running back two on this team, and then you hit on it, like, imagine adding a Breece Hall to this offense. Like, that would take you to another level.
Yeah, it is a good point. And specifically with Breece Hall, this would make the point I'm about to say moot. But I think you're basically, and I know Nick Asseri doesn't want to hear this, but you're really kind of looking at a two-year increment here. I'll use his lingo because I think Joe Mixon is done after the next 2 years. Obviously, Diggs on a one-year deal. So I don't like the idea of taking positions where they might be blocked to play in this two-year window because you're really trying to maximize.
I mean, a running back too is not blocked.
A running back would be behind Mixon.
Well, no.
Right,
but how often does an RB2 play? An RB2 plays like once every third play.
Singletary was supposed to be your RB2
barely
to start the year.
Second half of last year.
Right, but that's what we're saying. Whether it be injury or performance, most teams rely on two running backs now.
No doubt. Like, I mean, there's like, every team has a third down running back, basically.
It's fair. I don't like the idea if you're basically all in of these next two seasons with some of the roster turnover being built in with Mixon and Diggs leaving the roster. I don't want to draft guys, and obviously we can argue about how much a running back two will be blocked in this system, but I don't like the idea of drafting players that are blocked from playing when you're trying to win in a two-year window.
You also don't want to get caught with your pants down if, God forbid, something happens to Joe Mixon, suddenly
you never
have that quality depth behind
him. And I'm fine with them drafting running back. I just don't like it at 42 or maybe even the second round. Like third round and after, for it.
I generally agree. Like I'm pretty much on your side. I'm just not completely closing out the idea in the second if you absolutely love a player. So like my caveat's a very tiny one in a very specific situation. I mostly agree with your point. Now, I don't agree that like RB2 is the same as left guard 2. Like left guard 2 is never going to get on the field unless there's an injury, whereas RB2 is going to be on the field a good amount, like a decent amount. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Who's the most important rocket to their future? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.